You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Said I wanted to go ahead and give you some sexy topics because I get it. Talking about finance, talking about entrepreneurship, talking about food co-ops and the recession and the stock market crash and everything going on, inflation, it's not always sexy. And I have not given you a lot of sexy content recently. So when I went ahead and did the UFO episode, it was an opportunity for me to bring on some sexy content. I mean, come on, it's UFOs, and we had Avery Warner from the Chiller Queen podcast on to talk about that topic in detail, so that was an opportunity for me to talk about something that is obviously going to get your attention. But while the other topics of the last few weeks, dare I say, even the last few months, it might not have been as, quote, sexy, they've all been vital. They've all been incredibly important to you, because these are things that immediately impact your life. There's no other way to put it. We can't ignore what is happening around us, because the age of passivity, the age in which we could go about our lives and be an average guy, that died in 2020. That's not here anymore. It's not. It's a dream. Maybe it's an aspirational dream when we could go back to just living our lives and being a bystander to the things we see on the news. But sadly, that's not the case. And we can do one of two things. We can either wait to be victims again, or we can try and take back some immediate power back in our own lives. That is what I hope I've been able to go ahead and provide to all of you. Access to information and things that I am doing, because the mission of this show has not changed while the world around us has changed. Going back all the way to the first episodes we put out at the beginning of the lockdowns in 2020, the idea has been I'm going to take you along my journey of becoming a millionaire, financially independent, semi-retired, 30-something within 10 years. I started the show when I was 26. This year I'll be turning 28. So we've got a bit of a ways to go. But what I hope you have done, if you're a longtime listener, you'll hopefully appreciate this, is seeing the progression, seeing the things that I discovered through talking to guests, through talking about the topics on the show, and have implemented new skills and knowledge in my life, while also looking at the things that I thought were working that didn't work out, the things I used to believe that I don't believe anymore. This is a journey. This is not a one-and-done show. I've never claimed to be anyone's guru. Hopefully, though, you can use me as your social guinea pig to hopefully clear out a minefield of misinformation and problems that we're getting in the world around us. You know, I was talking to several folks over the past weeks. We had a big run over for many of the affiliates, and the affiliates are the links to products and services in the show notes: Fundrise, Robinhood, Hustlers University. Now, the Robinhood one has been the most contentious affiliate I've had, going back to January 2021 of the whole meme stock thing. At the end of the day, I say you get free stock for signing up, and if you don't like Robinhood but you don't have any stocks, sign up, get your free stocks, and either transfer them to another brokerage of your choice or sell them and cash out. I'm always for you getting something, even if it's from people you don't like. I use Robinhood, but I have multiple brokerages. I have my money in a lot of different places, but Robinhood still gives out, good deals for people. It still offers a great way to get involved in investing if you've never been involved before. I still use Robinhood. Do I think Robinhood is perfect? No, but I go ahead and advocate for the products and services that I personally use. Dosh is another one. I don't know why more people aren't signing up for Dosh. You don't have to put any money in. All you do is attach a credit card and you get cash back on top of the cash back you're probably getting back with your existing credit card when you go out and make everyday regular purchases. What's another one? Hustlers University. People think that Hustlers University is a scam. People think that Hustlers University sounds too good to be true. Well, Hustlers University worked for me. I'm not saying that because they pay me. I'm saying that because I'm a student. I've been a student since November of 2021. I still go through their stuff regularly. I advocate for it versus a lot of other stuff because how often can you find one single location that has current and ongoing courses on all the things you need to make money online from verified millionaire professors who are experts in their field and a community of people trying to support you. That doesn't exist. It's just how it is. And if you sign up and you don't like it because you don't like the fact that it's based on Discord or whatever, you get your money back in 30 days. It's just that simple. If you don't like these things, you don't have to use them. But I'm not telling you to go ahead and get involved in something that I myself am not personally involved in. The only thing on this show that I have ever issued a statement regarding me not liking the product or service anymore was Cash App. We don't need to get back into Cash App. I already talked about Cash App months ago. Go down the feed or go on my Instagram. You'll see I even wrote a little note and posted it to Instagram saying I'm done with Cash App. Why? Because Cash App customer service is non-existent. You could lose your money. You could possibly get issues regarding your personal private information, exposed. I mean, there were problems with it, and I blatantly said, I'm removing all the affiliates. I'm not talking about them anymore. I don't even have it on my phone. I closed my Cash App account. All this to say, I hope you've learned to trust me over time. And I hope that even when you see an episode that you might not think is based on a sexy topic, maybe you'll go ahead and at least give me the benefit of the doubt that I'm going to inform you with something that you can use to either prepare yourself or something you can use to help other people. And the big thing that I never thought I would have to ever talk about as an American is what we're talking about today. Today I'm going to go ahead and read an article titled, No Farmers, No Food, No Life. This was written by Carla Peters at the Brownstone Institute this past weekend. For the first time in America within my lifetime, we're having to look at the possibility of food shortages. We've talked about this as the supply chain issues have reached all new heights of stupidity over the past year. We talked about this in the food co-op episode. We've talked about this in other episodes when we had an economist on a few months ago, Alex Seltzer. He talked about how inflation would be impacting the price of food. I was telling you all in January what I was doing, which was I'm getting into emergency preparedness mode, and I was getting all into emergency meals and stuff like that because I felt like it's going to get hairy. And we're seeing this throughout the Midwest. We're seeing this in the breadbasket of America where the price of meat is soaring. Where, yeah, we're getting vegetables and stuff put on the shelves, but it's going bad. The quality is not there. It's filthy. You never thought in an American supermarket we would be dealing with something like this. But over the last couple of years, I think we've learned to go ahead and put that aside and look instead at the fact that we're living in some type of clown world because this is not the America we grew up in. And this is not the America that we were promised either. Hopefully, it's not the America that we want to go ahead and pass on to our posterity. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and read this article It talks about what's going on around the world as the World Economic Forum goons that are running all these progressive European countries that are influencing our own legislators and bureaucrats here in the United States are dealing with the fact that farmers, especially farmers in Scandinavian countries, are starting to realize that, you know, when you go ahead and close down the world economy, when you go ahead and make things harder for people by inflating the money supply, when you go ahead and try and create artificial issues in order to impact global trade, and then when you try and mix it all together with this new ESG, energy sustainment, and energy sustainability, I forget what the second part is, energy sustainability and governments. Bullshit. This is what you're getting. You're getting the world that we're living in right now. So I'm going to go ahead and read it to you. I'll stop here and there to provide my own thoughts, comments, concerns throughout. And I hope that you will listen to this because this is important. And frankly, I'm not seeing this reported anywhere else on the news. So if you want to go ahead and read it afterwards, I'll go ahead and leave a link to the article in the show notes. The title is No Farmers, No Food, No Life. Worldwide farmers protests are rising. Support by more and more citizens who stand up against the expensive mandates for changes to green policies that already brought massive miseries and instability. The world is now facing a man-made food catastrophe. It is reaching crisis levels. Current policies in the many parts of the world place a priority on climate change for realizing a Green New Deal. Meanwhile, such policies will contribute to children dying from severe malnutrition due to broken food systems, with shortages of food and water, stress, anxiety, fear, and dangerous chemical exposure. More negative pressures on farmers and the food system is asking for a catastrophe. The immune system of many people, especially children, has lost its resilience and is weakened too far with high risks for intoxication, infection, non-communicable and infectious diseases, deaths, and infertility. Dutch farmers, of whom many will face a cost of living crisis after 2030, have drawn the line. They are supported by an increasing number of farmers and citizens worldwide. We saw this a little bit with what was going on with the convoy in Canada just earlier this year, as a side note. It's not the farmers who are the most heavy polluters of the environment, but industries who make the products needed for a technocracy revolution to green energy, data mining, and artificial intelligence. As more of the WEF plans are rolled out by politicians, inequalities grow and conflicts are rising all over the world. The Strong Farmers Revolt in the Netherlands is a call for an urgent transition to people-oriented, free, and healthy world with nutritious food cultivated and harvested in respect to natural processes. The cooperation of ordinary people worldwide is on the rise to prevent a mass famine catastrophe caused by a plan of scientism and technocracy to rule and control the world by unelected scientists and elites. And I mean, this type of language, I'll let you know how I discovered this article. I didn't discover it from the Brownstone Institute. I found this from NewsWars.com. And people might see the link and they're like, oh, News Wars tied to InfoWars. I'm not reading it. Understand, this wasn't something they read. This was republished from a nonpartisan think tank by somebody who would consider themselves an Austrian economist and libertarian in how they view the world and global markets. This is the world that we're living in now, where we have to think this way because it's no longer in the shadows. They're talking about this stuff openly. Next part, enough food. Access to food is the problem. Farmers around the world normally grow enough calories per person to support a population of 9 to 10 billion people worldwide. Still, over 882 million people will have too little to eat each day. The problem is not always good food, it is access. The UN, which wrote in 2015 in the Sustainable Development Goals, goal number 2, no hunger and malnutrition for all in 2030, will not be reached. Throughout history, many times natural or man-made disasters have led to food insecurities for longer periods of time, resulting in hunger, malnutrition, which is undernourishment, and mortality. The COVID-19 pandemic has worsened the situation. Since the global pandemic began, access to food estimates show that food insecurity has likely doubled, if not tripled, in some places around the world. Moreover, during the pandemic, global hunger rose to 150 million and is now affecting 828 million people, with 46 million on the brink of starvation, facing emergency levels of hunger or worse. In the hardest hit places, this means famine or famine-like conditions. At least 45 million children are suffering from wasting, which is the most visible and severe form of malnutrition and potentially life-threatening. With global food prices and fertilizers already reaching worrying highs, the continuing impacts of the pandemic, the political forces to realize climate change goals, and the Russia-Ukraine war raise serious concerns for food security, both in the short and long term. The world is facing a further spike in food shortages, pushing more families worldwide at the risk for severe malnutrition. Those communities which survived former crises are left more vulnerable to new shock than before and will accumulate the effects, driving into famine, the acute starvation, and a sharp increase in mortality. Furthermore, growth of economies and development of nations are currently slowing down due to a lack of workforce, due to a sharp decrease in well-being and higher mortality rates. In the wake of a new nitrogen limit that requires farmers to radically curb their nitrogen emissions up to 70% in the next 8 years, tens of thousands of Dutch farmers have risen in protest against the government. Farmers will be forced to use less fertilizer and even to reduce the number of their livestock, in some cases up to 95%. For smaller family-owned farms, it will be impossible to reach these goals. Many will be forced to shutter, including people whose families have been farming for up to 8 generations. Moreover, a significant decrease in limitations of Dutch farmers will have huge repercussions for the global food supply chain. The Netherlands is the world's second largest agricultural exporter after the United States. Still, the Dutch government pursues their agenda on climate change, while there is currently no law to support the implementation. While they will not change much in the planet's major air pollution, models used to arrive at the decision of the Dutch government are debated by even acknowledged scientists. In no communication have Dutch politicians considered the effects of their decision on breaking a most important goal of the UN agreement: ending hunger, food insecurity, and malnutrition for all in 2030. Let's pause and remember what they say is going to happen by 2030. It's the Klaus Schwab, you will own nothing and you will be happy. You will own nothing and you will be happy. You will live in a pod and you will be happy. You will eat the crickets and no longer eat the meat. How this man ever became so affluent, how the World Economic Forum literally turned into our worst nightmare for people that value individual sovereignty and the independence of free-thinking people. It used to baffle me, but after witnessing how we kowtowed to the state over the past couple of years, it really did prove the point that people will gladly trade freedom for security. And sadly, this is what happens when those people get in charge. They don't either think about the negative repercussions or they just don't care. It makes no difference to me. This made sense. You don't do it, but they did anyway. Continuing, unfortunately, Sri Lanka, a country whose political leader introduced zero nitrogen and CO2 emissions policies, is now facing economic problems, severe hunger, and difficulties to access food upon a political decision that farmers were not allowed to use fertilizers and pesticides. Side note, I went ahead and put in my Substack newsletter, which you could subscribe to in the show notes, remzo.substack.com, everything leading up to the collapse of the government of Sri Lanka at the beginning of July, in which the president ran out of the country because of not what happened a few weeks ago, not what happened a few months ago, but what happened in just a couple of years, in which a nation went from being relatively all right to being where it is now. And what we're seeing in Sri Lanka is what we're seeing with the Dutch. It's what we saw in, it's what we saw in Canada. The Canadians really hyped, I mean, just they hyped up the threat level from nothing because a bunch of truckers got mad. And now Canada has turned into a police state. And we're seeing this in other places, but the media doesn't like to talk about it. Our politicians are intentionally ignoring it. But should we expect anything different? Still, politicians responsible for nitrogen emissions, climate change, and other countries pursue the same green policy. Furthermore, experts are warning that heat, flooding, drought, wildfires, and other disasters have been wreaking economic havoc, with worse to come. Food and water shortages have been in the media. On top of that, Australian experts announce a risk for an outbreak of viral disease in cattle. This could cause an $80 billion hit to the Australian economy and even more real supply chain issues. Countless businesses and producers go bankrupt. The emotional toll they are facing to euthanize their healthy herds is immense and hardly bearable. It is pushing more farmers to end their life. Hopefully, the need for the Danish government to apologize, as an investigative report on the call of more than 15 million minks in November 2020 criticized the action that led to the misleading of mink breeders and the public and the clearly illegal instructions to authorities, which will help politicians to reconsider such drastic measures on farmers. Worldwide, farmers' protests are rising, supported by more and more citizens who stand up against the expensive mandates for change to green policies that already brought massive miseries and instability. At the Ministerial Conference for Food Security on June 29, 2022, just a couple days ago, UN General Antonio Guterres warns that the worsening food shortages could lead to a, quote, global catastrophe. Next section, malnutrition responsible for more ill health than any other cause. Yes, that's right. We probably shouldn't be worried about monkeypox. The increased risk of food and water shortages the world is facing now will bring humanity to the edge. Remember, this isn't an InfoWars article. This is from the Brownstone Institute. The increased risk of food and water shortages the world is facing now will bring humanity to the edge. Hunger is a many-headed monster. For decades, conquering world hunger has become a political issue in a way that it could not have been in the past. The use of authoritarian political power led to disastrous government policies, making it impossible for millions of people to earn a living. Chronic hunger and the recurrence of regular famines must have been morally outrageous and politically unconceivable, says Drez and Sen in Hunger and Public Action, published in 1991. Quote, for those at the high end of the social ladder, ending hunger in the world would be a disaster. For those who need availability of cheap labor, hunger is the foundation of their wealth. It is an asset, wrote Dr. George Kent in the 2008 essay, The Benefits of World Hunger. Malnutrition is not only influenced by food and water shortages, but also to the exposures of extreme stress, fear, insecurity of safety and food, social factors, chemicals, microplastics, toxins, over-medicalization. No country in the world can afford to overlook this disaster in all its forms, which affects mostly children and women in reproductive age. Globally, more than 3 billion people cannot afford healthy diets, and this is a contradiction to what many people think is just low-income country problems. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic began, about 8% of the population of North America lacked regular access to nutritious and sufficient food. A third of reproductive-age women are anemic, while 39% of the world's adults are overweight or obese. Each year, around 20 million babies are born underweight. In 2016, 9.6% of women are underweight. Globally, in 2017, 22.2% of children under the age of 5 were stunting, while undernutrition explains around 45% of deaths among children under 5. as stated by Lawrence Haddad, the co-chair of the Global Nutrition Report Independent Expert Group, quote, "We now live in a world where being malnourished is the new normal. It is a world we all must claim as totally unacceptable. While nutrition is the leading driver of disease, with nearly 50% of deaths caused by nutrition-related non-communicable diseases in 2014, only $50 million of donor funding was given. Malnutrition in all its forms imposes unacceptable high costs, direct and indirect, on individuals, families, and nations. The estimated impact of the global economy of the chronic undernourishment of 800 million people could be as high as $3.5 trillion per year, as was stated in a Global Nutrition Report in 2018. While child deaths, premature adult mortality, and malnutrition-related infectious and non-communicable diseases are preventable with the right nutrition. This will be much more at this precious moment. As the population sharply increases in excess mortality and non-communicable diseases among the working age people, as recently shown by insurance companies." We're down to our last section. Famine causes transgenerational effects. I want a preface of this one. Have you ever met anybody who grew up in like Cambodia or Vietnam? You see this with some Koreans as well. You see it with people like my grandmother's generation. My grandmother on my mother's side is from Korea. She was displaced and on the run with hundreds of thousands, millions of South Koreans during the communist invasion in the Korean War. And what you see from people in those parts of Asia, particularly over the last 70 years, is the fact that a lot of them are shorter. Now, a lot of them were shorter genetically, but you see a difference in photos, and you're starting to see it now with their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. The grandchildren and the great-grandchildren are taller, they're stronger, they're healthier in most regards, especially if they were lucky enough to immigrate to the United States. Living in Virginia, you saw many of them. Vietnamese, and we've got Little Saigon in Springfield, Virginia. Like you see this thing where they're just they look smaller. They don't have as much muscle on them. Generations impacted by the policies of madmen, which impacted not just them, but their children and their children's children. And it takes generations to get people back on track. This isn't something that happened hundreds of years ago. We could see it right now in our own communities. Going back to it, famines cause transgenerational effects. Famine is a widespread condition in which large percentage of people in a country or region have little or no access to adequate food supplies. Europe and other developed parts of the world have mostly eliminated famine, while widespread famines that killed thousands of millions of people are known from history, like the Dutch potato famine from 1846 to 1847, the Dutch hunger winter of 1944 to 1945, and the Chinese famine of 1959 to 1961. I think we call that the Great Leap Forward, in which everyone was going to become a farmer, and then Mao killed tens of millions because not everybody should have been a farmer. But hey, real communism hasn't been tried yet. The latter was the most severe famine, both in terms of duration and the number of people affected. 600 million. Let me read that again. 600 million affected, and around 30 million dead, and led to a widespread undernutrition of the Chinese population in a period from 1959 to 1961. Currently, sub-Saharan Africa and Yemen are countries with recognized famine. What's going on in Yemen is almost entirely because of Saudi Arabia and U.S. involvement. That's my own personal note that I'd like to add there. Unfortunately, global destabilization, starvation, and mass migration are increasing fast, with more famines to be expected if we do not act today. epidemiological studies of Barker and later Hales showed a relation between the availability of nutrition in various stages of pregnancy and the first years of life and disease later in life. Their studies demonstrated that people with metabolic syndrome and cardiovascular diseases were often small at birth. More and more research proves the role of nutrition-related mechanisms influencing gene expression. Even during prior to pregnancy, might influence a later risk for insulin resistance or other complications of the fetus. As demonstrated in the study of 3,000 participants in northern China, prenatal exposure to famine significantly increased hyperglycemia in adults in two consecutive generations. Severity of famine during prenatal development is related to the risk of type 2 diabetes. These findings are consistent with animal models that have shown the impact of prenatal nutritional status on the neuroendocrine changes that affect the metabolism. I'm sorry, I don't know what half these words are. I was public schooled. I apologize. So you're just going to have to do your homework if you don't get what those are, because I know I am. Can be programmed to transmit physiologically across multiple generations through both female and male generations. Long story short, famine has an impact long term. Early life health shock conditions can cause epigenetic changes in humans that persist throughout life, affecting old age mortality and have multi-generational effects. Depending on which trimester the fetus is exposed to food deprivation or even stress alone, a related disease later in life might vary from schizophrenia, ADHD to renal failure and hypertension, among others. Other studies of famine exposure in people have produced evidence of changes in the endocrine system and the prenatal gene expression in reproductive systems. The effects of periods of famine or undernutrition have predominantly been seen in people with low socioeconomic income. However, 1 in 3 persons in the world suffered from some form of malnutrition in just 2016. Women and children are 70% of the hungry. There is no doubt that undernutrition increased further during the past 6 years. Stunting and wasting increased in the most vulnerable. 2 out of 3 children are not fed the minimum diverse diet they need to grow and develop to their full potential. The hungry people in countries like Sri Lanka, Haiti, Armenia, Panama are on the tip of the iceberg, opening the eyes of many citizens worldwide to the fast-growing problem and the result of lockdowns, mandates, and the coercive policies in climate change, drought, and the Ukraine war. Citizens of the world have been facing for years excessive mortality, a fast decline in infertility and childbirth, with a threat to human rights for women and more diseases. Shocking reports of the UN and WHO acknowledged that the WHO, because I don't want the band The Who to be accused, my bad. Shocking reports of the UN and WHO acknowledged the health of people and environment is declining. The world is moving backwards on eliminating hunger and malnutrition. The real danger is that these will climb even higher in the months ahead. The truth is that food innovation hubs, food flats, artificial meats, and gene and mind manipulations will not be able to tackle the depressing state humanity is facing. Let me go ahead and read that again for your liberal cousin. The truth is that food innovation hubs, food flats, which is vertical farming, artificial meats, and gene and mind manipulations will not be able to tackle the depressing state humanity is facing. Zero COVID policy has brought humanity at risk in its existence. COVID-19 vaccines with a risk for harm have been rolled out for even children under 5 years old. Hardly at risk for severe disease, but undernourishment, the greatly increased susceptibility to major human infectious diseases, has not been taken care of. Conflicts are growing worldwide, increasing instability. Citizens will no longer accept policies with a clear harm cost benefit. Citizens will no longer accept policies without a clear harm cost benefit analysis. We need to act now to decrease food and fuel prices immediately by supporting farmers and effective food systems for nutritious food to heal the most malnourished in the population. Let us hope for a return to Hippocrates' principle, let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food. This was a lot to take in. I hope that you learn something from this and you can understand how to identify how this is going to impact you. You need to take care of yourself, your family, and then you need to take care of your community. Because if the last few years showed us anything, it's that the whole lone wolf thing only goes as far as you can feed yourself. And now, panic at the Costco might be more of a realistic situation beyond just the toilet paper scares of 2020. It might be panic at the Costco, where's the beef edition? As usual, if you enjoyed this program, please share it with a friend. Consider leaving a 5-star rating and review. And just remember, we will survive. We will thrive. We can do better. We'll get there together. I didn't intend for that to rhyme. That's just my jive. I'm Rosa W. Martinez. Be safe. Be good. Good night. For those of you listeners who know my background a bit, you might remember the stories of my first few jobs after college. From being a mall cop to selling makeup door-to-door, I realized that I had skills that were being underutilized and that these minimum wage jobs couldn't support me or last forever. I spent years going through YouTube, reading books, listening to podcasts, and taking enough online courses to reinvent myself as a professional copywriter and digital marketer. Years later, thanks to my side hustles and drive, I've worked with national news outlets, multi-million dollar tech startups, nonprofits, and celebrities to build their brands and drive sales. None of this could have happened if I didn't develop in-demand skills. I had to do this alone, but you don't have to. You have Hustlers University 2.0. Hustlers University 2.0 is a community where you can learn real skills to earn money online today, starting with side hustles you can use to elevate your game. I'm not just an advocate for Hustlers University, I'm also a student. Every professor is verified to be making $10,000 to $500,000 monthly in their selected field. You get full resources, lesson plans, and an active community of thousands of other Hustlers University students working on skills such as stock analysis, cryptocurrencies, e-commerce, copywriting, which was my favorite course, one I actually went ahead and took last month. And as a copywriter of 7 years, I even took a ton out of that, including some of the resources I was able to take over to my day job. You also learn freelancing, financial planning, affiliate marketing, business management, and so much more. If you're tired of depending on a boss who hates you to deliver your paycheck, or have learned since the lockdowns that controlling the source of your income is vital to your individual freedom, sign up for Hustlers University 2.0 today using the link in the show notes. I'll see you there. We'll be right back.